Zoom meeting, the United Lodge of Theosophists. We are an association of students devoted to the philosophy, to promulgating the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy. Why is that? Well, to learn it, to study it, to make ourselves the better able to help and teach others. And we do so by studying with a similar with a similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. And that similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching is really the sole bond that holds us together. There's no organization that we join as members. There's no authority, no one in charge. There's no set of bylaws, but rather a declaration which lays out the principles for which this association exists. And of course, the association, the lodge, invites anyone who so is finds himself in accord with these teachings and in accordance with the purposes of the lodge, to certainly you're certainly invited to participate in all of these as either an associate or as a visiting independent student of theosophy, which is what we all are. And that being said, we have three meetings per week, whether in the building or out, and we are not sure when we're going back to the building. So these Zoom sessions are on a Sunday morning, such as now during the summer, 11 to 12 a.m. for July and September during the summer. Sundays we take off during August. During these Sundays of summer, we're studying articles by Robert Crosby, and today's article is The Kingly Mystery. Of course, Wednesdays we study the Bhagavad Gita, and that class consists of a reading of several of the paragraphs in the chapter of the Gita assignment each week, and then plenty of time for questions and answers. And then finally, of course, on Wednesday from 7:30 to 8:30. Then, of course, on Fridays from 5:15 to 7:15 is a roundtable discussion on different articles in the pamphlet called The Higher Life. And it's more of an open meeting. We start out with the topic that's in the pamphlet, and the purpose of it is to openly discuss the different ideas as they come up. So using that pamphlet, that article as a guide for the discussion. So without further ado, the article for today, oh, by the way, the lodge is sustained entirely by voluntary contributions of time, money, and service, and everyone is welcome to contribute in any way you care to. If certainly that's something that you're interested in, you're welcome to reach out to the host or to the ult.phila and find out different opportunities for service if you care to. Thank you. So anyway, without further ado, The Kingly Mystery is the article for today. We are going to have the first five paragraphs of that article summarized, and then discussion and questions on the entire article as comes up for the hour. So we have a fellow volunteer who is prepared to do that summary. Thank you.
So it was interesting because the very last paragraph that we're summarizing basically is, which is the fifth paragraph, it ends with the goal that we're looking for when we think of this kingly mystery. And our goal for all of life is that of divinity, of going back to the divine. So one of the ways we can do this then is to have a knowledge of what is this kingly mystery. And the very first sentence says it all. It is life itself, that we all have life, all is life, everywhere life shows itself. But he warns us that according to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, that there is something that we do need to know before we can actually understand what this kingly mystery is. And that is to learn what the truth is. And by understanding, we shall be delivered from evil, Krishna says. And by understanding this, by understanding what the truth is, then by studying it, understanding, putting these ideas forward, he says this is the attitude of the true student. But we must be on guard, though, because of all the false ideas that we see in religion and philosophies. We have to get rid of these false ideas. And the two main ones that are put forth in the article is that we have been taught from childhood that we are poor, miserable sinners. And the second one is that man is here only for one life and one life only. And because of these erroneous ideas, we're responsible for all the ill that exists in us. And all suffering can be brought back to these false ideas. And there's the question about sin and disease, sorrow and suffering, and that these are as a result of our erroneous ideas in regards to what truth is. And man, because of these ideas, these erroneous ideas, man holds himself back. And if we could only understand what our true nature is, we could correct these ideas. And one of the things that we do that is because of these erroneous ideas, because these ideas, these falsehoods are telling us that we are only these physical bodies. And as long as we focus on these physical bodies and whatever kind of action we do is on the physical and material plane of life, then we're only going to be getting physical results. And this is not what the real knowledge is. It is not the knowledge of our immortal and our spiritual selves. And the kingly mystery is not specifically focused on this physical existence. This physical existence is only one aspect of the great life. And we have to go into our immortal nature, our spiritual nature, in order to understand what this kingly mystery truly is. And it's not just ourselves that we have to look at these aspects about the true idea of our nature, but it's in everything. We have to understand that all beings have this kingly mystery as well, that it's life. And the power lies within us in order to be able to delve more into this kingly mystery, to look at the truth, and to know that we are more than just physical beings. And this idea of the universal point of view and the essential spiritual basis of everything lies in the idea of the one self. And this one self is not divided up into each being, but that each being is this one self. Each being is that in his essential nature. So it is the idea of understanding and finding out what this full knowledge of life is, that man will understand his own true nature and his own and the true nature of all life. Because on every, we are getting the effects from different beings of different grades. And we are receiving these effects differently. And the beings below us, the lower kingdoms, they are all in us. We are part of all the lower kingdoms. They help to form our physical being. And by understanding that, we will have a greater realization of what all of life is, what this kingly mystery pertains to. It's a physical and a spiritual prospect that we are trying to live up to. So then the part that we're looking at today ends in regards to evolution, because it is our responsibility with these lower kingdoms that were just mentioned, that is, it is on us to recognize the kingly mystery in everything so that we can help all of nature rise up into a self-conscious way of life.
Thank you. Any contributions or questions to start with? Or observations? Yes.
This refers to the kingly mystery and begins by quoting Krishna in chapter 9. And in chapter 9, Krishna gives out the kingly mystery. And I just like to set the tone by reading it, but substitute the word life for where he usually says the word me or I. All this universe is pervaded by life in its invisible form. All things exist in life, but life does not exist in them. Nor are all things in life. Behold, this is my divine mystery. Life causing things to exist and supporting them all, but dwelling not in them. So that gives us a way of appreciating what we're talking about, life. This divine principle that supports and sustains all, like space, but cannot be said to be confined, no more than space can be confined in a thing. We can't say that a thing has life and another thing doesn't. It's not an entity which dwells there, but it is all part of and pervaded by this spirit consciousness, life.
Thank you. So if we look at the Gita and recognize that Krishna is not the personal God that there's a tendency to make him out to be, and take that idea and go right back to the article in the first paragraph to follow up with this and this idea of life. Unto thee who findeth no fault, life will now make known this most mysterious knowledge. Why is it, what's going on here? Why is it that we will only learn this mysterious knowledge if we find no fault? The person who finds no fault, what's going on there? J.S.
When you find fault, you're reasoning from preconceived premises, aren't you? You've got some sort of blinders on where your mind is closed to an open and universal inquiry. So if we feel in ourselves a knee-jerk reaction of bean counting, where we're arguing with particulars, we don't have our insight on the universals, the greater spiritual view.
So it starts out when if we are finding fault, then that's a sign to ourselves that we're probably not thinking big enough, our heart isn't open enough, we're not operating from that more universal part of ourselves. MDW, please unmute.
CDW.
No, CBW. CBW, hold on. Mike Wagner, please unmute.
Yes. Mr. Crosby, you know, sort of clears this up, and he calls this finding fault really having a critical attitude. And that's something which sort of flows from us quite quickly, because in our society, we are shown how to develop a critical attitude. You know, we have a way of assessing situations or of looking at people and when we meet someone, we don't really have an accepting attitude. We have a critical attitude.
All right, so then this contribution has to do with the use of criticism and applying it to someone else. When we criticize other people, the question comes, you know, who do we think we are? How can you know to make such a judgment call? That's not to say that the power of observation is not useful for ourselves, to reflect on ourselves in a critical way, not in a judgmental way, but looking back and assessing the value of how we think and how we act. When we take that and project that outside of ourselves, we're not actually defining the other people by our critiques of them. We're actually defining ourselves by critiquing others. So then if we go back to that sentence, unto thee who findeth no fault, life will now make known this most mysterious knowledge. So it almost seems like once we set the conditions within ourselves to non-judgmentally associate with others and in a namaste kind of way, then perhaps we're preparing ourselves for this more mysterious knowledge. CBW, you had a contribution.
Yes. Those of us who served in the United States Navy recall the blowing of a pipe. And we each understood, and generally it was a call, all hands on deck. And then the next thing you heard when you were there and standing at attention, now hear this. And our ears were open, we received directions, not individually, but the whole, shall we say, regiment, but in the Navy to call your company. And after listening, he said, company dismissed, not a single one, but the whole group. Now, what does it compare to in these ideas with discussion? Now hear this, and the whole regiment, call it that, was at attention. Regimentation.
Well,
it seems the
contribution here, we're saying to one has to prepare himself for the instructions. Any other contribution along that line with this? Yes, SL, please unmute.
The call of truth is not directed to us personally. truth in its highest sense is universal. It's for all beings. It refers, it has no limitations. So all hands on deck, now hear this, company dismissed, all refer to the collective humanity. The truth is for all beings, all humanity. And so the more we get ourselves away from our own prejudices, the more we get away from our more preconceptions, selfish views, the more we are prepared and open ourselves up to this more universal light.
Thank you. Yes, JD. Unmute.
Okay, my space bar isn't working today for some reason. Anyhow, in my initial instruction for theosophy in the local lodge, the teacher talked about a concept of what he called conditional credibility, meaning to listen to what he said with an open mind, not necessarily accepting it at face value, but keeping an open mind and letting the truth reveal itself to us when we're ready to digest it, when we're ready to accept it. And I have found that through all of this, for me, that's what works, is to not be judgmental, but just don't accept it at face value. Allow it to reveal itself to you over time.
So the contribution here, so there's the distinction here between passively listening and accepting to these different ideas by allowing some authority to declare the truth to you, as opposed to being receptive to ideas and let them kind of either mature within oneself or marinate, and in time, if there is credibility to it and we are philosophically prepared to see the truth of it, we're going to see the truth to the extent that we're prepared to see it, if in fact the ideas are true, always maintaining the authority to dismiss it as false if we prove it to ourselves that they're false.
Yes.
LT. Thank you. Thank you, Jenny. LT. Lucian.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
I like this. The speaking of the divinity, I think it's rather very powerful. Starting on 222, I'm going to read briefly through it. The one self appears only to be divided among the creatures in reality. It is not divided at all. Each being is that in its essential nature. It is the foundation of all power. It lies in the power of unfolding evolutions, which makes it possible for every being representing one ray of that one life. More so on every hand, we are getting effects from every different beings of different grades. Each one receiving those effects differently. And let me see, the sparks of one spirit. Now there is one part where it says that we are literally all connected from every elemental life here, which we've spoken about. The beings below us in forms of minerals, vegetables, and animals worlds are all working just as we are working towards a greater and greater realization of the whole. Sparks was a one. Spirit of the one consciousness, they have begun their little lives in forms of bodies which they may contact others. Such as there is a whole course of evolution always from within ours and always within a tendency to increasing individuality from the one ocean of life, there finally tends to arise divinity. It's a powerful message by means of, you know, everything in this, as somebody, you know, in this group has stated that, and even with Crosley, is that everything is divine from the very smallest to the, from micro to the macro. And such that every element and being in this universe evolves from one another, whether other elements evolve us or vice versa. And the human being is such an interesting creature that it is so complicated, especially in these times. And there's so much prejudice and labeling that makes it so difficult for people to really evolve, whereas humanity is stuck in this divinity situation. Whereas, you know, I think we're getting to the point that we really have to fall back, observe, and really recondition ourselves to accept who we are as a divine individuals, the one consciousness, and then being able to work with others and really, you know, radiate that to others, if that makes sense. I think it's powerful, and I think that really clicked with me that every living individual and element on this planet really evolves of one another, and that's pretty powerful.
It's very powerful, and when we try to remember, when we think of evolution, if we try to remember that the evolution is on, it's on three different planes, on the physical plane, the mental plane, and the psychic. But it's helpful to remember that it's not that the form evolves, forms adapt to the conditions, but what's evolving is the intelligence, which informs the structure, right? And so intelligence moves through lower kingdoms onward and upward, and as intelligence evolves, it prepares itself for greater and greater complex expression in higher forms of organization, right? And as the article speaks to, and becomes more and more, or should we say, approaches closer and closer individualization. And that individualization ultimately results in the self-conscious individual human being. Yes, Em?
In regards to the last comment, when we're talking about the lower kingdoms evolving, we can't forget the fact that it's our impressions that are assisting them in their evolution. And that's one of the things we have to put out to the public, is the effect that we have with our thoughts and our feelings we have on the lower kingdoms, especially those that make up these physical forms. So the evolution of the lower kingdoms needs us in order to push them forward and upward. So it's a huge responsibility that humans have in order to assist the lower kingdoms into becoming self-conscious human beings in the future.
Perhaps that's an example of what's mentioned in the article, where Mr. Crosby was talking about, okay, we kind of lost it, but the idea that was coming was that we remember listening to a lecture where when the Westerners arrived in America, this concept of I can own this parcel of land and you can't because now it's mine, it was entirely outside the consciousness of the indigenous Americans at the time. And that may be an example of living a life as a participant in the unity of the whole, as opposed to living a life of separateness because of false ideas. I can own something else if I feel I'm separate from it, and then I kind of bring it into my gambit. So these false ideas that Mr. Crosby is talking about seem to be limiting us in terms of how we see it seems to limit us in the recognition of our unity with everything else from the lowest elementals onward up. Any other ideas along that line? SL.
CBW.
Your next CBW, SL.
Oh, well, it's an extension of that, but it also goes back to JD's contribution regarding credibility, conditional credibility. not accepting, but allow the truth to reveal yourself. And it brings up the question, is there a step that has to be done in between those two? And this article, it seems to suggest that by focusing our consciousness on false ideas, we limit the ability of the truth to reveal itself. Not only that, by acting on those false ideas, we create up the selfish conditions in ourselves that limit its ability to reveal itself. So between acceptance, conditional acceptance, and allowing the truth to reveal itself, there's a lot of active work and study that has to go, a lot of searching and digging, not just in books and what other people say, but into ourselves to pull out and see what we hold as truth and hold it up and examine it in the light of what other people think. Two or three people can look at the same experience and have three different ideas of what's going on. And it's only by them sharing that they get a different view, a wider perspective, and get closer to the truth of what it is.
And these kinds of meetings, aren't they a perfect example of that, of sharing these ideas and hearing different viewpoints and testing them for ourselves to see how we can learn and grow from each other? CBW, you had a contribution, please.
Yes, yes. Again, using military service as an example, we paid attention. We were on deck listening. But we paid no attention to what was said. So the commander would say, "Didn't you hear me, boy? Step out of line. Get in your face and say, give me 40 laps around the stadium." Well, by the time you got to 10 laps, you were flat on your face, tired out. Next time, listen to me. Pay attention. Well, we certainly waked up and listened and paid strict attention to what the words meant, really. Not so much how I was to act at that particular time. And we saw that pain teaches you. We straightened ourselves out, listen to that word, and became a rear guard, not the tallest guy in the company, but a rear guard. And how I followed orders marching to the rear rather than forward gave one an important place in the column, in the regiment. Pay attention and teach yourself by the errors you make how to be a better participant in the work on hand. So by using analogy in correspondence many times, the words don't throw us for a loop. Analogy in correspondence in meditation makes us even say, "Aha, now I see what he meant." And we'll continue there. Simplicity is very important. And from that simplicity, we may be introduced to the complexity of human life.
Thank you, CBW. So we have a question here. Mr. Crosby makes the statement that divinity is always acquired. So often we hear the idea that we are, in our essence, divine beings. That the premise for life is that we are an expression of divinity. How can both be true, that we are an expression of divinity, it is our essence, versus divinity is always acquired? SL.
If we go back to that quote from Krishna, I myself existing in all things, causing them to exist. All things exist, but I do not exist to them. And yet he says, all things do not exist in me, meaning that divinity may pervade all of life, all beings, but unless we consciously exist in it, we don't acquire that divine state of awareness. We don't exist in it, even though it is present in us. So we think that's what it means to be acquired. We have to acquire self-conscious awareness of it.
So it's that we have to put ourselves into a state, like we have to live a state of being divine, which perhaps speaks to the main thrust of this article, which is, you know, the problems that we face in life are directly related to the false ideas. And one of the great false ideas is that we are this body, this is one life. If we recognize that we are immortal divine souls, then life would probably go a lot differently. The state of being divine. So a state of being divine is always acquired. MDW. We can't hear you yet.
Mr. Crosby ends this article, sort of sums it all up. It's like he says, whom will ye serve? Whom choose ye this day? And in the simplest of terms, who do we serve? Do we serve our higher self? Do we serve our lower self? Do we serve others? Do we just serve ourselves? I mean, we work in a physical world, but we sometimes forget our higher nature, and we do not in any way, shape, or form serve that. You know, that we are, in reality, we are spiritual beings. We are not these bodies. We are not these feelings. We're not all of that. What are we?
What are we and who do we serve? Well, let's think of the expression, whatsoever you do to the least of your brothers, that you do unto me. Who is the me? And we're not talking about the guy 2,000 years ago. Perhaps that me, whatsoever you do to the least of your brothers, that you do unto me, is the same me as unto thee, who findeth no fault, I will now make known this mysterious knowledge. Me, perhaps, is life. Whatsoever you do to the least of your brothers, that you do unto life. So who are we serving? By serving others, we're serving life. It would seem that that's what's being said in this ancient proverb. J.S., please unmute.
You know, sometimes it seems like it's an expanding set of concentric circles, the same way as a newborn infant begins to focus solely on the caregivers, and then gradually across time begins to be aware that the infant is separate from the caregiver, that there are more in the world than just that caregiver, and each circle of awareness expands a consciousness, expands an arena of service to others. And ultimately, the enlightened circle that is boundless is the one in which, after all these gradual evolutions, we gradually come to a place where whether we're serving the care of a particular body or we're serving a houseplant or a pet or we're serving family or extended friends, the nation, whomever, it's all one thing. The process is all a service to life, wherever and however it manifests.
Thank you. J.S.
Yeah, a question. Frequently, when we're considering the propositions of the three fundamentals, as students, we use the word that the absolute is unknowable through these finite minds, that no matter how pure the imagination, attributes don't apply to the abstract, to the absolute. And in this article, we are cautioned, I guess it's paragraph 3. Again, we say we cannot know, or this life is all there is. The whole force of our consciousness is directed in the line of that one false idea. We cannot know. How are we to align what we study about the absolute and not being able to know versus what Cross is writing in paragraph 3?
We find relations. My paragraphs aren't numbered. Could you tell me what word that paragraph 3 starts with?
Again.
Okay, we might have messed it up. Nevertheless, how is it that we can, without really understanding or knowing what the absolute is, how can we use that as the basis? Well, let's start. It's hard. Let's start with the idea that, you know, HPB invites the student to consider that we are at once identical with the unknowable, and the human being is also identical with every force, principle, and power in nature. We're identical with that which is unmanifested, and we are identical with everything that is manifested. Might that be a start? And whoever's got the dog, can you please go on mute? Is there a dog running around somewhere? No, okay. So would that be a start? The idea that we are identical with both the absolute and with all the manifested universe. Would that have something to do with it? LT.
Okay, let me mute myself. I think through my studies and personal experiences with the so-called divine, it's in my understanding through my experiences that there's no way we can really take on the full divinity, but yes, we have the spark within us to really live life and be aware of it. Through my experiences, there's no way we can withhold or withstand the ultimate divinity in consciousness. It's impossible. With that being said, you know, having that we as humanity have come to a point that we are knowledgeable of the infinite now, and we can actually have a better grasp of that without having to deal with the consequences, whether back then had we talked about this in as humanity or, you know, as a in our times or back then, it would have been people were burned alive for this kind of stuff. People were, you know, killed for this kind of stuff. It was one set of mentality and that's it. Whereas today we actually are able to explore the divinity within us and be able to work with that. Going from child to, you know, with aging, we really, you know, start at clean slate, and we really have to, I think the most, and excuse my verbiage, but as a child starts from a clean slate, we really have to work with that and really reverse back to that. And to really understand ourselves again, we've spent years as, you know, humans in these conditioned societies to accept what is, and that's it. Whereas getting back to really understanding our divine being and powers that be has to come through these groups and understanding that there's more through that, but it really has to come back to where we were as we started. I think it's powerful that we are able to discuss this today versus 100 years ago or beyond that, whereas that wasn't even accepted at all.
So this contribution started with the recognition that, you know, the absolute divine can't possibly be known, nor can it be a being. We're kind of paraphrasing it, but so it can't be fit into one being. So no human being can conceive of it. And we have to be careful about assigning human attributes, qualities, and traits to it. Yet, and each human being within himself can reflect on what's been going on in his life during this lifetime and know that that is, some of that is not of the divine and it's not who I am. Some of these things is what I do, and we have to get back, as was said, we have to get back to the clean slate of the birth. Perhaps we have to get even further back of the clean slate of beyond previous births, of wherever that first thought of separation, the I, me versus you, began. Because wherever that first thought of separation from others began, that was the beginning of the false ideas that we're making the effort to come to overcome now. Make sense?
CBW.
Hold on, CBW.
Yep.
LC, go ahead.
And that's where Crosby, if I'm saying it right, I have the article in front of me.
Crosby.
I wish I had a printer because this stuff is amazing. I'm really excited to be part of this group. But it is why, you know, having these false ideologies or, you know, ideas is that it is why we are having such a hard time as a race, as a humanity, having all these beliefs that we are suffering all these issues, you know, all these karmic situations that started way back, and now we are reversing that and going back to the source or going back to where we should have been years ago.
Right. So the contribution here is like there's so many across humanity where we put so much between us and the divine. And an example for this it would be, you know, the good folks of the world, wherever they're from, whatever religion they're from, sometimes have a hard time, like, why are you saying that, you know, it's not, or it's dangerous to consider the idea of a personal God? Well, you know, if that personal God that you worship, is all loving and all powerful and all supportive, and you see it as a father figure, why could that possibly be bad? Well, it's not bad per se, it's just dangerous. Why? Because that father figure, that personal God, wants me to read this book and not that book. He looks like this, but he doesn't look like that. Because I look more like him than you do, I'm more spiritual. And here we go into the conflict. When the truth is, there's no personal God. There's no even ability for the human being to conceive of really what that is. So if we could all get beyond these false ideas, get beyond all of these images, or what does he call it, all these masks of God, then there's participation in a place where there's no conflict and where differences are completely irrelevant.
CBW.
Yes, CBW.
Well, we were very much encouraged by the kingly mystery. Wait, on page 221? Mm-hmm. When we heard, it is life itself. The one who desires to know must set aside, for the time being, all preconceptions, pride, and prejudice, which we may have held. Then he's ready to begin his studies, to take the right step in the right direction. Well, we're very grateful for these words. And we say thank you very humbly, because we thought we knew what we were talking about in these things. But when we saw the kingly mystery, we went to the end of the line. And we gave an example of ourselves in the Navy. We were the rear guard, the shortest guy in the regiment. Yet, found out later that it was an important post, because he and the commander said, to the rear, march. You became the leader. When he said, forward, march, that tall guy in front was the leader. Was there any difference? Not at all. Because we put all our thoughts on the physical as an astral or conscious, a self, small letter consciousness of our ideas. Here, the eternal verities point out the way to the term regimentation. Boy, you have to keep listening and listening. And then when these ideas touch a hidden spot in one's own nature from experience, oh, now I see what that means. And we continue on, but humble, gratitude, and humility.
Thank you, CBW.
Is the eternal truth.
Thank you. As regards the last comment, this statement in the article, all that a man can know of God is what he knows in himself, through himself and by himself. Never by any outside presentation can that realization be gained. All that a man can know of God is what he knows in himself, through himself, and by himself. So what do we have to do in ourselves, through ourselves, and by ourselves to more closely understand who or what God is? SL.
Well, we have the advantage compared to other beings that we are self-conscious. That means we are capable of being aware of self. So we need to turn our awareness away from the material world within, away from our personal natures within, and try to see if we can become aware of some principle in ourselves which always is, never was not, which is changeless, which has no attributes. We cannot say it looks like this or looks like that or has like this temperament, but is it a changeless basis and source of all we do? And sometime we give it a name, we call it I, but even that I itself is impersonal. It has no beginning or end, or it's not limited in time and space. And the more we turn our awareness to that, the more we become aware of that, we gain a realization of that self or that divine principle within.
Thank you. So then that I, that is not all of the different qualities of the human being, what's it doing there? Sometimes that eye is called the perceiver. Simply observing. Yes, SL?
Well, once again, from the Bhagavad Gita, it says that I myself cause all things to exist. At the beginning of a great cycle, all things come forth from me and return from me. So we might say that that I is not just the witness, but is the source of all that we've become. All our ideas, our thoughts, our aspirations, our efforts, all have their origin in that I, and yet that I is not directly involved with them. It's agencies, it's powers, it's forces, but it has to have its impulse from that spiritual center.
Lucian.
One thing came to mind, and our nice gentleman speaking of his experiences in the Navy, thank you for your services. My father has also served in the Navy. Thank you. The really came to mind is humanity in a boat, as however many people, and just being in the vast of the oceans or divinity, and just really navigating from one point to the next phase of humanity as we ascend. I guess it's this knowing and the divinity, or this knowing within us that really is the internal compass, and having an understanding of everything and appreciating the elements that are before us that really help us get to the next phase much faster as a collective consciousness, versus this is me, this is all I know, everybody needs to believe this, such that belief may be exactly what retards us or really inhibits us from getting to the next point, to where we really need to be. So I like this whole concept of being in a boat with a whole bunch of, as a collective consciousness, and being able to get or transfer, we're getting transcending to the next phase. And I think that was pretty cool. Thank you for bringing that to mind.
Sure. And isn't that exactly where we are? Isn't planet Earth the boat? And isn't Noah's Ark the symbol for that boat? And isn't it interesting how this conversation has moved to a place of the only others there are the collectivity of minds in which we participate, and we reach that inwardly through ourselves, as opposed to outward from us, where there may be strife, conflict, competition, etc. All of that is in the interest of what? Of separateness. And gaining false power by identifying with that which is without. As soon as we direct our attention to within, then there's more of a participating in the collective. We have time for one more contribution or question or suggestion.
TBW.
No. Yes, MDW. I was muted, sorry. MDW.
CBW.
No, MDW.
Okay.
His statement stating that we are evolving from within outward, and it had been mentioned before, that so really it's we are evolving from our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. So again, the foundation of our being are the ideas that we hold. So we have a few ideas today that will help and perhaps blossom in our nature that will be of some help.
Thank you. So we'll leave the meeting with this one idea that Mr. Crosby mentions, you know, divinity is always acquired. And it's the responsibility for each and all of us to do the work to acquire that divinity, which is to say, by self-induced means and self-devised methods, or is the student able to progress and to be the better able to help and serve others? Thank you for attending.
Right.